when we first decided that we were going to try and gain passage to the village this summer, we introduced ourselves as Pepper and Salt. And that apparently gained enough of John's interest to allow us in. What does Africa have to do with the United States of America, or what does it have to do with Holden? Is probably one of the questions that we raise when we see or hear the topic. Well, we shall see. Ten years ago, when I came to the village, some of us had started to do some work with fairy tales. And there were a couple of fairy tales that I told to begin one of the lectures. And I'm not going to tell those this morning, but I'm going to start with another one that's apropos for what it is that we'll talk about this morning. I'll go kind of fast because I'm intensely interested in questions and reactions from all of you. It's a big topic, bigger than the continent of Africa itself, and much larger than all of the peoples who are engaged in rhetoric and discussion about the problems of Africa, most notably those of Southern Africa. Story is the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. As the story goes, there was this boy named Jack who found some beans, and he planted the beans, and a stalk grew up through the clouds into the ionosphere. And Jack got on the stalk and climbed up, and he found himself in giant dung. That's where the story really begins. It didn't take Jack too long to acclimate himself to the place, for he began right away consorting with the giant's wife and engaged her in a conspiracy to rip off the goose that lays the golden egg. The venture, of course, was quite successful until the giant discovered what was going on. And that's when he comes in and Jack takes the goose and runs and climbs down the stalk again, the giant in hot pursuit. Jack clips off the beanstalk, the giant plummets to the earth and dies, and the children cheer. There are morals even to fairy tales, except that one has to search rather carefully for the clues to the moral. One of the lessons from the tale that I've got is that there was an immediate clash between Jack's notion of what's a proper use of wealth and the giant's use. We're told that the giant had the goose laying one golden egg per day, which was all he needs. We are further told by certain clues in the story that it was Jack's intention to have the goose's behind sore from laying more golden eggs than he needed. The clue to what it is we want to talk about this morning comes in the little rhyme that the giant began to recite when he smelled something going on wrong in giantdom. Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman. Now, one doesn't have to search too much to find references, both historical and contemporary, to Africa as being what? The sleeping giant. One does not have to search too much through the ledgers of multinational corporations to determine that Africa is without question the richest continent in the world. It has mineral and material resources second to none. That includes diamonds and gold and, most importantly, oil. Some of us believe that that's how it all began. A brief history of Southern Africa. Southern Africa, and indeed all of Africa, has now joined many other sections of the world as that which writes the songs, the history, and in a sense determines the future of the rest of the world. Therefore, any discussion about public policy, any discussion about world politics, any discussion about the place of the church in the world must take into consideration the presence of Africa and those events which are happening there at this very moment. Southern Africa may be compared to unfortunate events in the history of the United States and its relationship to the world. Indeed, it might be compared to Korea, Vietnam, almost all of Latin America, but most notably in Latin America, Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. It all began, at least our contact with Africa, in the early 1800s. There are three countries that I want to draw particular reference to this morning. These are three sub-Sahara countries, southern tip of Africa, that are dominated by white majority regimes. They are Namibia, Zimbabwe, and Tanzania. Namibia was formerly called Southwest Africa. Zimbabwe was referred to as Rhodesia, and Tanzania called South Africa. Historical evidence clearly refutes the common claims of the South African government, documents that are published here in the United States, that Europeans and Africans arrived simultaneously in certain unoccupied areas of what is now South Africa. The history of African societies, which some of us have been digging out lately, shows that the existence of blacks in the southern section of Africa, both the coast and the interior, go back thousands of years. And some of this history and culture have been preserved both orally and through archaeological findings, such as the fortress-like ruins found recently in Zimbabwe. To the best of our knowledge, Europeans came to South Africa about 300 years ago. Initially, their contact and work in Southern Africa was peripheral along the coast, and in the early part of the 19th century, they began to move into the interior. At the same time, during the early part of the 19th century, the Boers, or Afrikaners, as they are called today, and British settlers penetrated deep into the interior, and there they discovered gold and diamonds and other precious metals, and this spurred on an additional settlement of the southern section of the continent. They encountered, when they began their massive penetration into Southern Africa, two large tribes of people who were not primitives or pagans, as we call them, but they were a highly developed society of peoples with a very complex system of governing themselves. They are called Zulu and Xhosa. And the Tosas and the Zulus fought with the settlers, but because of superior military might, they lost. 1906 was when the war was settled and the South African government began to evolve. Namibia was claimed by the Germans in 1884. And it wasn't until 1904 that the conflicts in Namibia were, quotes, settled, when the German armies massacred one of the larger tribes of Namibia called Herero peoples. To date, there are less Hereros who are Lutheran than there are Ovambos who are Lutheran. We might want to examine why the Hereros continue their resistance to the claims of Christ on their lives. At least the claims of the Lutheran Christ. Zimbabwe is one of the more interesting ones, called Rhodesia today. Its takeover was spearheaded by a British imperialist named Cecil Rhodes. I remember in Houston at the All Lutheran Youth Gathering, Chris Christopherson and Rita Coolidge and a few other people were sitting around resting, you know, after entertaining the children, and some of us were all agaga over the fact that Chris Christopherson was a Rhodes Scholar. And Chris Christopherson said, "Yeah, I was quite proud of that, you know, up until the time I found out who that damn thing was named for." But Cecil Rhodes developed, of course, a rather large trading company and of course, was without question one of the richest persons in the world. And his South African company also had an army. And this army defeated the Shona and the Mdele people who resisted the rule of his company. All over Southern Africa then, segregated townships, Bantustans, Transkeys, similar to reservations, developed. And that remained quiet pretty much until 1976, when for the first time in U.S. history, our consciences were as pricked by events in Africa as they were in Southern Africa, as they were during the Nigerian conflict with the Igbo people. It's called Biafra, and many of you will remember the days when we took the wrong side on that question. Over 1,000 children were killed in Soweto in 1976. 1978, Angola became the object of the South African, this was in May of this year, of the South African Army's anger, and over 1,000 women and children were killed and buried in open graves in Angola. These were all Namibian people, one of whom was the daughter of Leonard Walla, who is the bishop of the Ovambo Church in Namibia. It was just the other day that we discovered that it was a fact that Leonard Walla's daughter had been killed when the South African People Army bombed a SWAPO, Southwest Africa People's Organization camp in Angola. So much for the history. I want to read something to you from a little booklet called Torture, a Cancer in Our Society. And this is a statement from a South African person. I have experienced the fate of a victim. I have seen the face of the torturer from nearby. and it was in a worse state than my own bleeding, grayish face. The face of the torturer was deformed by a sort of jerking which lacked any human quality. It was in such a state of tension that it yielded an expression which can be compared with that of Chinese masks. I do not exaggerate. It is not so easy to torture human beings, for it requires an intercomplicity, an assent. In this situation, I was the more fortunate one. I was being debased. I did not debase others. I was solely carrying a deeply saddened humanity in my painful body, while the men who debase others have to degrade first the notion of humanity in themselves. It is of no avail if they stagger on in their uniforms, inflated by the self-assurance that they are the controlling masters over the sufferings, the sleeplessness, the hunger, the desperation of their fellow men, poisoned as they are by the power in their hands. Their being poisoned is precisely the degradation of their humanity, the extreme degradation of their humanity. They had to pay a high price for my pains. It was not I who was in a desperate situation. I was only a human person groaning in great pain. I would rather have it that way in this moment. I was deprived of the pleasure of seeing children going to school or playing in the park. But they have to look into the eyes of their own children. The list goes on. Stephen Biko. Nelson Mandela. Bram Fischer. Pius Nordi. Fisher and Nardi, of course, are not black South African. They are white. Robert Sobukwe and the children of Soweto, the women and children of Namibia. It's a pile of suffering. But the deep travel, it is not like that in childbirth, really, where one rejoices that a child has been born. But rather it seems to lead nowhere. Or if it leads anywhere at all, it leads simply to more suffering. People are willing to suffer patiently while there is hope. But without hope, suffering leads to anger, and anger to bitterness, and bitterness to hate. There are people all along the spectrum today in Southern Africa. And there are people all along the spectrum today in the United States, especially as they look at the South Africa situation. A few weeks ago, Manus Buthelezi made his third visit to our parish in Oakland, and it was announced in several newspapers that he was there, and then it was announced again that he had been there. And because our phones are public, I had again the experience similar to those that I had in South Alabama during the days of the civil rights movement, the threatening phone calls, many of them from Christians. One woman identified herself as a Lutheran, and she said, I'm so tired of you clergy parading around as Lutheran clergy when you are all tools of the communists. Don't you know that Manus Buthelezi is a communist, and you're a communist sympathizer for allowing that man to come into your church? Don't you know that the communists are using that man to open up South Africa so that they can take over? Sisters and brothers in the Christian community should not behave so, we say, but nevertheless we do. And all of this is elicited pretty much by events in Southern Africa. Whatever we do is not in the form of self-appointed do-goodism, from a lofty seat of self-righteousness. But whatever we do, it ought to be a response to those of us who understand our weakness in the light of what's going on in other parts of the world. When we ask, what can we do? One of the early answers we receive is to stop supporting our tormentors and the tormentors of others so that at least that kind of travel can come to an end. It may be that we Americans have sinned as a part of a democratic society in our relationships to Southern Africa. For we forgot key words in our national vocabulary when it came to applying them to Southern Africa. Words like liberty, equality, justice, freedom, and the new catch-as-catch-all phrase these days, human rights. By the way, people on the outside are jumping up and down now because there's a big human rights question. Political prisoners in Russia. Boy, we're ready to take them to task. Are human rights being violated in Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Azania? Tress and I joined 80 other Lutherans in one of the frontline states last summer. In fact, it was just about a year ago today that we began our trip home. I'd like to just share with you, in conclusion, one response from Lutherans at the Lutheran World Federation in terms of where the church is. And then I'm going to violate some of my principles and go through about seven lists of things we ought to be trying to do. And then I'm going to shut up and try to leave as much time as possible for discussion. Have any of you seen this little book, Reflections on Dar es Salaam? It was written by Wilford and Eleanor Bachelman. They're both laypersons, and it was written for lay people, and Wilford and I were talking in the airport at where was that?
Zurich.
And he was telling me what he had intended to do and how he had gotten Lutheran Brotherhood and some other people to try to write some kind of minutes from a church gathering that lay people could understand. Four Latin words. Eleanor didn't write this part. Eleanor wrote about the third paragraph. Four Latin words became pivotal in this assembly, where the official language otherwise spoken was either German, French, English, or Swahili. The Latin words were status est, and more importantly, status confessionis. The words are good historical Lutheran words expressing the essence of how Lutherans define the church. For the church really to be the church, Lutherans have always argued it is sufficient, status est, that the gospel be rightly preached and the sacraments rightly administered. Other characteristics may indeed be important, such as exercising a prophetic role in calling attention to injustice, but these cannot be established as a status confessionis, a basis by which to judge whether the church is indeed the church. There is sound reasoning for this approach, of course. It can easily become a tendency for people to want to read each other out of the church on the basis of politics or piety. The status est has served the church well in giving balance during those years when some rigid rightists called into question whether a true church could exist in a socialist, to say nothing of a communist country. By the way, these words were being penned as a part of the reflection of the Lutheran World Federation having met in a socialist state, where the church, incidentally, that dominates much of the religious life is Lutheran. I'm talking, of course, about Tanzania. To continue with the quotation, but does there ever come a time when really to be the church may mean more than simply to preach the gospel and administer the sacraments? The whole question was raised because of the apartheid system in South Africa and Namibia. There had been some expectations that black delegates would ask for the expulsion of the white churches of South Africa from the Lutheran World Federation. But the black leaders refused to take this approach. Instead, they sought to have the Lutheran World Federation redefine its criteria for membership so that churches who would refuse to accept these criteria would exclude themselves. Now to quote Manus Buthelezi, a worship service that by deliberate design excludes some people on the grounds of race and political creed may very well be a cult of a divisive God who is alien to God, the Father of Jesus Christ. After much debate, numerous attempted amendments to make the language less drastic, and referral back to committee for rewording, that all sounds familiar. The resolution was adopted. And it reads something like this: under normal circumstances, Christians may have different opinions in political questions. However, political and social systems might become perverted and oppressive so that it is consistent with the confession to reject them and to work for change. We especially appeal to our white member churches in Southern Africa to recognize that the situation in Southern Africa constitutes a status confessionis. This means that on the basis of faith and in order to manifest the unity of the church, churches would publicly and unequivocally reject the existing apartheid system. To date, they have not. An article in the San Francisco Chronicle a few weeks ago on the Dutch Reformed Church in Southern Africa suggests that the Dutch Reformed Church is not at all concerned about whether or not ethics obtain in Southern Africa. They are more concerned about whether or not the laws of the land are kept, for indeed the church in Southern Africa writes the laws and the songs that inform the laws. Enough said. What can we do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1. We can have more discussions like this. 2. We can become informed as to what organizations like the UN Security Council does. We can look specifically at UN Security Council Resolution 385 and interpret that properly to our people. We can support efforts to discourage investments on the part of our people in Southern Africa. We can become a part of that network that assists refugees. And there are many Namibian refugees in this country, some of them studying at Lutheran seminaries. One of them running a church in Oakland while Roy and I vacation. We can become aware of U.S. policy. We can have as much influence as we possibly can on the economic collaboration between South Africa and the United States by watching our own dollars. And finally, we can stop banking on South Africa. That's a new program which suggests that people who want to do something should talk to their banks and see if they are indeed banking on or in South Africa. I think that we may have said just enough now to raise at least some questions or some concerns from you. But before you do that, Pepper may have a a reaction. Go ahead. But before you do that, Pepper may have a reaction.
Go ahead. Stay with the question.
All right.
I'll get it in a minute.
Yes, sir.
Is one of the failures or deficiencies in our understanding, by our, I mean people like myself, in our understanding of the situation as it obtains in South Africa, due to the weighted or slanted view of the media that we have? Is it political influence that does this to us or keeps it from us?
Yes, sir. I brought along a little booklet. This is about Rhodesia, and it's really it has some interesting things in it. It's a coloring book. I'll just read one of those to you just to show you how it's slanted. And these are things that come to this country. These are things that are used sometimes in schools here in the United States. The communist terrorists bring nothing but sickness and death to people. By the way, you can get these at certain bookstores in Orange County. You can also get them in certain bookstores in Wisconsin and Minnesota.
How did you know I was from Orange County?
And just this one, you know, with an African woman, in tears. You all can't see it. The caption above it reads, "See the woman crying. She has just learned that the communist terrorists have infected her with VD. The mad dog communist terrorists of ZANU, ZANLA," these are all freedom fighting organizations, and they would include ZAPO, SWAPO in this, "have infected many women in Rhodesia with this terrible sickness. The children of such women may be born mad or blind or crippled. The women's husbands will catch VD and spread it to their other wives, whose children too will be diseased. So the sickness which the communist terrorists bring from Mozambique is destroying the people. This is the way of the communist terrorists, to destroy the people with sickness and death, so that their evil communist masters may come from their hiding places in Mozambique and steal the country from the people." Now, occasionally, if you look at the Los Angeles Times or some of the larger newspapers, you will see articles like "Missionaries Massacred by terrorists," or "Gorillas," they're called too. Yeah, and you'll read things like that a great deal more than you will hear conversations like this one, you know, in the American press. The New York Times now has established a policy, at least it has with several articles that they have printed, that we have to admit, says the New York Times, that these articles were censored by the South African government. So we cannot attest to their validity or invalidity. I've never been to South Africa. I got as far as the Johannesburg airport once, some years ago. And because of my association with Dr. King, I was told that I would not be happy in the country. So they kept me in the Jonas Airport, you know, until the Pan Am jet took off for East Africa. But just from the detention quarters in the airport, I could tell, you know, some of the things. And Joe Byrne will be here in a few weeks. He has lived there, so he can tell you more. But it carries an amazing resemblance to the United States of America. Kellogg's, Coca-Cola, Datsun, Ford, RCA. I thought I was home, you know, just in the little detention quarter. And it wasn't too difficult for me to sense that South Africa is us and we are them.
Well, would you deal a little bit with the argument that's heard that the American companies are a beneficial influence in South Africa because they could be some kind of a catalyst for change? You've heard that.
Yeah, the argument is one that U.S. investments and interest in Southern Africa could be a catalyst for change, primarily because we are a democratic nation and we don't hold with apartheid and other expressions of racism like that. Ha ha. The other one is that if we were to withdraw, this is the Bank of America statement, they've taken out, you know, full page ads all over the country and you know, in Europe, saying that it would be immoral for this country to withdraw its support from the South African government because the black people would suffer. I can only respond in the way in which South Africans have responded to me. And they've had to, of course, be very careful in their response. So I'm going to just give two quotes, one from Paul Isaac, the Namibian who has been at our church for 3 years, and from Manus Buthelezi, when the question is asked. One, our people, Manus is speaking now for the Zulu people and the Tosa people, our people are used to suffering. And you may have heard me talk a little bit about the merits of suffering when there's hope, you know, like a woman who's giving birth to a child, and the merits of suffering when there is no hope, like blacks in Southern Africa. But our people are used to suffering. Indeed, our people are used to suffering without hope. We are prepared, says Manus, to suffer with hope, but we cannot suggest to you what you ought to do. We can only suggest that you follow the dictates of your conscience. That's his public statement. His private statement says, nonsense. They aren't going to improve the lot of our people by staying there the way they are there.
One thing that troubles me about this morning, we look at South Africa and we see the Russians and the Cubans always jockeying for a stronger position. So much of what we said seems to be kind of a lack of support, a withdrawal of those who would support the apathy type of movement or type of government. What can we do that's more positive to help the peoples of Africa? It seems to be, we felt more in negative terms, like lack of support of those who would suppress. But what can we do for the oppressed that would be a positive movement?
The oppressed say, the one way that you can help me is to get the oppressor off my neck. I can't think of a better, more positive response.
Does that mean militaristically approach, or what are we talking about?
Let me use by every means necessary and appropriate to whatever it is you feel is right.
The list you gave quite a list there.
Thing that troubles me, excuse me.
Well, let's hear you out.
The thing that troubles me is, you know, we look at this as being, you know, it's a gold mine, South Africa. You pointed out in your introduction statements of all the mineral wealth that's there. We look at the problems that got into Vietnam, that huge quagmire. We look at the, again, the Cubans and the Russians moving in constantly to get in a better position and we seem to be always supporting the wrong cause. And it really troubles me, where do we go from here? Do we make a militaristic support? Do we support those, like we said, who are oppressed? Is it merely an absence of support of those who are the oppressors? It's just very troublesome to me. What move we should take would be a positive one, which would be in the best interest of not only Christianity, but the United States.
In somewhat conjunction with this, we hear, at least I've read, that if we were to take off the oppressors, so to speak, that the blacks would totally annihilate the whites. In my view, if we let the whites go on, they would totally annihilate the blacks. My real question comes to the point of, is there any way that this situation can be solved peaceably without wholesale bloodshed?
Yeah, Tuskegee, Alabama, late 50s, early 60s. The white people had gerrymandered the city, and the reason they had done that was to, you know, they drew boundaries through the city so that all the blacks were outside of the city limits, so that they couldn't vote, because the blacks were in the majority. Well, that, you know, that issue was fought all the way to the Supreme Court, and of course the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't do that, so the blacks held an election. The very first set of folk in the election were about half white and half black. Let us say that other countries have been liberated in Africa. Doesn't follow. It's very strange. You know, I hear people saying, the blacks are going to kill all the white people. But then the same people who say that always say, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming. What color are the Russians? Red, of course. But the question, I mean, it's that's a hopeful question. If blacks take over, they will kill all the whites. But that's not, I don't see that as something that I would even want to speculate about. I have faith in those people.
I think
you see, the reason I've got faith in them is that somehow they conducted themselves well for 5,000 years before the presence of the Dutch Reformed Church and the Afrikaner and Germans and French and others. Another question, of course, is Andrew Young and I disagree on one small issue. Is time up? Is time out? Oh. Oh, okay. Thank you, John. The issue of civil rights, of a civil rights movement in Southern Africa has been raised, and Andy was there, and he suggested that that the black South Africans conduct a civil rights movement similar to the one that we conducted in this country. That would be true if blacks in Southern Africa had any civil rights. You see, the constitution of the South African government does not allow for the existence of a black in white South African society, especially after sundown. Good film to see is a film called Last Grave at Dimbaza. I don't know, maybe we can bring it up here sometimes. But it's a sock in the gut, but it tells the whole story in living color. It was pirated out of Southern Africa by an excellent team of TV persons who were quite skilled at this process called cinema verde.
We saw it. It was very good. Mm-hmm.
We saw it
also.
We showed it a seal of our astro
company. Uh-huh.
Well,
yeah.
Do you happen to know Ani Shlongo?
Yes.
From Namibia?
Yes.
Well, she spent some time with us this summer, and she said she'd write as soon as she got back, and we've written to her, and we've wondered if anything's happened to her, because we haven't heard from her.
I have not heard anything from Namibia since last week, when several young people left the school. One of them was the brother of Pastor Paul Isaac. and the letter came to Paul from Botswana. And this was the last time we've heard anything from them.
Being a pastor herself.
Yes, I know she
I
is.
I thought maybe she would be having it pretty hard and young. She's very young.
She may be in Zambia by now. It's very difficult to tell.
Is our mail getting to her, do you think? I mean,
there is no way that I can tell that. Stuff's heavy. It's heavily censored, you know, going in there. So you can always try, but generally we communicate with people who are in questionable areas through the Lutheran World Federation, and that they still can facilitate some communication.
Well, I'm interested in your feelings about the killings of the, let's say, those at the missionary stations, and then also in your beginning you made a comment about which tribe did not accept the Lutheran Church and why. Would you share your reactions on those?
Mm-hmm.
You see the terrorists, you know, hitting the white as a way of indirectly striking at the government, or?
Now, I cannot condone the killing of anybody. The notion of priests and nuns and people like that being shot to death is not something that I find attractive. I find it reprehensible. First of all, there is some question as to whether or not these people are being killed by the liberation armies. Indeed, there is some question as to whether Kapoor, the Herero chief, you know, who was assassinated recently in Namibia, whether he was killed by Swapo people or whether he was killed by South African police. Leonard Waller suggests that it was probably South African police. All South African police are not white. All provocateurs and agents in a guerrilla warfare like the one that's going on in Zimbabwe, Zania, and Namibia are not white. All whites who are fighting in those places are not South Africans. But if the liberation armies were committing these atrocities, no, I cannot condone them. But I do understand why they're doing them. Perhaps we ought to have a forum on violence. You see, violence, when it's discussed by the oppressor and the power people, generally leads the oppressed into a kind of elliptical discussion. You know, there's just literally no way out of it, primarily because violence in terms of defending oneself or getting back what one owns is not justified, especially in the eyes of the one who has it. Can't be. That's one thing I want to say. Now, the other question that you raise, of course, is the question of the intertribal conflicts. That's always interesting. The Igbo people were the people we elected to side with in the Biafra-Nigerian thing, you know. Everybody knows why. Because the Igbo people were more malleable, you know, in terms of our thing. Most of the Igbo people came to the United States to study. They were more adept at becoming Western, and very much, you know, inclined to cooperate should they have come to power. Probably more so, you know, than the present government of Nigeria, you know, the military government, we thought. But we get along well. Carter just left and they didn't eat him. They fed him. The intertribal conflicts are things that I don't know if we can master right now until at such time as we become objective. But as long as as we enter into those conflicts with the kind of self-interest that we have, then I think we're in trouble. Now, it's true that the South African government has used, to a certain extent, many Herero people as opposed to using Ubombo people. It's also true that the Southwest Africa People's Organization is mostly Ubombo, but also Herero. Kapuo would have been a formidable foe in the event of a free election for the Swapo people. Would have been interesting to see what would have happened in the event of a free election. We anticipate one by September, but that may be delayed as much as December. I don't know. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened. But I don't try to get into these tribal kinds of things because the tribal differences ought to be allowed to exist on their own, as I said.
Excuse me, to follow up on that, just one second. Will it be a free election? What do you think of the possibility of that actually happening?
The United Nations is attempting to assure a free election. Mm-hmm. In fact, there may be as many as 1,000 Lutherans from this country going to Namibia to supervise. Poll watchers and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The United Nations resolution that I referred to, is the one that talks about that. And presently, there's a negotiations going on now in the United Nations. Five, quotes, Western powers, the Southwest Africa People's Organization, and representatives of the government of South Africa. They were close to a settlement, it was thought, at the time that the South African government elected to drive SWAPO from the negotiation table by forcing SWAPO people to have to go to Angola to bury their dead. Their women and children. Was there a hand here? Yes, ma'am.
Well, don't you think that one of the best things that we can do as individuals is to get into this public policy thing and write to our representatives and use some influence on our government. This is something that we don't, it's something sort of new for us, and it's hard for most people to do, but it seems to me that we have found that it does work. I mean, that they do want to know what we think, and they are influenced by what we say.
It's been said that a well-written letter is as effective as a bullet, or can be as effective as a bullet. So can an aspirin.
I think there ought to be a little more emphasis in our thoughts about that objectivity that you mentioned a moment ago, because I suspect, at least from my point of view, that a lot of the rhetoric about the communists and the Cubans and all is really stepping around the issue of the real reason why our government is concerned is the investments that are in that area. There are a lot of major corporations that have a lot of money there. And I deal with that issue a little bit in the work I do. But I know as far as banks are concerned, a few banks are starting to say, we're not going to pull all the loans out, but from now on there's no new loans to South Africa. And some large companies have had stockholder resolutions that say, pull out. And they've gotten some large institutions voting stock to support those.
An entire city in California has done the same thing, City of Davis. They've just said, we're not going to do business with anybody who does business with South Africa. That includes banks that sit on city property. We're just not going to do business with them. That was a resolution by the City of Davis. And there are healthy signs, and these are, quotes, things you can do. But most importantly, it is be aware, become aware and try to, you know, have your consciousness raised to a point at which you could be forced into doing whatever it is that you might determine as appropriate.
The real problem is the source of information, knowing what's happening.
Yeah. Andrew Young says, I'm not bothered by a few Cubans, you know, in Southern Africa. Of course, he said the other day, why are we so upset about political prisoners in Russia when we've got thousands of political prisoners in America, USA? The Congress says, prove that. Are we going to prove that or resign? Well, I can send them a list of political prisoners. I was one once.
During the time when you were with Dr. King?
Yes.
But wouldn't the argument be raised that, well, that's all in the past, now there are no more? I happen to agree with you. I know there are some also. White, black, whatever.
That's right.
Speaking about getting information and knowing whether it's good information, you know, there are places that you can get it. And for instance, like Bread for the World, they send out information every month. I happen to be a coordinator, and I think it's to me it's the best source that I've had, and I've learned the most. And there's always, every once in a while, there's a mention of different African nations, mm-hmm. where we can help by writing to our congressmen, and we get.
Let me just give you a couple of addresses, if you want some of the information which I get. Most of the stuff can be very easily gotten from Ed May. Ed May, Lutheran World Ministries, and he's with the Office of World Community, and it's at the Park Avenue address in New York. He can send you as much real dope as you need. There are Namibia information packets with cassettes and film strips and all kinds of things available to you. The Stop Banking on Apartheid group has gobs of information, empirically verifiable data, which would be quite helpful in informing you as to what's going on. Documents, even from the World Bank, if they're read carefully, can tell you an awful lot about U.S. investments in South Africa. The U.S., what is it, Monetary Fund, what is that thing called?
The International Monetary,
Fund has, you know, they have to make all these documents public. So you can get all that stuff, you know, some of it, just by writing to the International Monetary Fund itself, or writing to the U.S. Mission.
I just wanted one word of a kind of freeing word to help people with whatever. It's got two parts. One part is the part about if God is in His heaven, then we can do whatever we see, we think we ought to do. It doesn't have to be right. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be the ultimate solution. It just has to be what we see to do. So a lot of the information is poor. We can keep working on information. So we don't quite know what to do. We can do that. But it isn't necessary for us to be God when we take our action and have it be the proper action. And the second is that I think there's a book that really helps. It's called Alan Lakin. It's by Alan Lakin, How to Get Control of Your Time and Your Life, on how to procrastinate creatively. And that is, if whatever it is you're considering doing is too big, then chop it up. If there's somebody you're supposed to deal with and you can't bring yourself to do that, then maybe give yourself simply the assignment of making an appointment to meet that person in 2 weeks. You've already committed yourself now. So I guess I just wanted to say a word about don't hesitate to break responses down. If you're not on a corporation, if you're not a senator, so what? So if right now it's just a matter of getting some information, don't put down that step. You know, don't say, well, maybe I'm not ready to do anything other than find out a little bit more. It's a good step. Just start on that one. Rather than do nothing, because after all, it's too big. You know, usually when I hear, what can a person do? It's because it's too big. All right, break it down. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.